Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Luann Crane here with my co-host, Ryan Dobson.
Well, Luann, right from the start, we need to warn parents that today's topic is very intense. Mm-hmm. If you have little ones in the area, maybe you should call us for a CD or listen online in private, because our topic today covers one of the most horrific periods in world history.
Well, you're referring, Ryan, to the slaughter, to the literal extermination of millions and millions of innocent men, women, and children who died under the Nazi regime in the 1930s and 40s. 6 million Jews and as many as 5 million others, Catholics and gypsies and Poles and political prisoners and homosexuals and others were considered undesirable, went to their deaths, including those who were mentally handicapped or who just didn't measure up to the Nazi standards for acceptability. I still can't believe it happened.
And we're going to be hearing today, Doctor, from someone who actually lived through that appalling time. He even spent time as a child in a concentration camp. First, though, Doctor, while this may have happened over 70 years ago, it is still intensely relevant to where we are as a culture today.
Well, it's actually quite easy to see how this period in human history relates to what we're seeing today. You know, with examples of infanticide and euthanasia, and of course the what we call the unborn Holocaust. Some estimate that as many as 54 million babies have been aborted in the United States alone since 1973. So we have blood on our hands too.
It's just atrocious, Dad. To put that number into perspective for our listeners, that represents the population of the 72 largest cities in the United States combined.
And it's even important to note, Ryan, that this coming Sunday, November 13th, is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. Mm-hmm. I just read the other day at ChristianPost.com that 105,000 Christians are killed every year just because of their faith.
What continues to move me is that history is repeating itself. We're talking about it today. We can't forget or let future generations forget what really happened those many years ago. Many of those people who died in World War II of such cruel deaths, you know, gas chambers or being shot or hanged in their own neighborhoods. Others were moved around like cattle in boxcars with scarcely enough room to even breathe. I have stood on the landing where many of those Jews in Berlin were forced onto those boxcars and the doors were shut. They had no water. They had no sanitation. And they couldn't even lie down. And they took those trips to the concentration camps and were divided into those who could work and those who couldn't. And those who couldn't went straight to the gas chambers, and that included all children. I mean, if you just take a few minutes to understand what really happened there, I think you will be committed for the rest of your life to human rights wherever they are being abused around the world.
That's right.
Well, as I said a moment ago, history is now repeating itself. In fact, anti-Semitism, you know, the hatred of Jews, is a phenomenon not just of World War II, but it's spreading around the world today. And, you know, there are mass killings in other parts of the world. Somewhere between 300,000 and a million Iraqis were killed by Saddam Hussein. And people say, we should not have gone after him. We should not have tried to take him out. Should we have tried to rescue the Jews in World War II? Then we should have rescued those in Iraq that were being systematically murdered. I think of the Armenian Holocaust that took place between 1915 and 1923. During that time, virtually the entire Armenian population of Anatolian Turkey disappeared. They were murdered. That's an estimated 1.5 million who died under the rule of the Turks. Now, Shirley and I have some very good friends, John and Flo Waltrip, who are Armenian, and their families suffered unbelievably during that Holocaust. Their grandfather was a deeply committed Christian and a leader in the community, and he took a stand for Christ, and the Turks came in during that slaughter and grabbed him and took him out as he clung to his big Bible, and he wouldn't put it down, and they tied him to the back of a car, and they dragged him all over town until he was dead. And they still have that blood-stained Bible, and I've held it. Oh, I've seen it. So this is still going on, and we need to speak out on it because this is the human family. And for people to tell me I shouldn't talk about this because it makes us uncomfortable, you're just going to have to cut me some slack because I believe I should.
Well, Dad, you had the opportunity to meet our guest, Bill Meyer, and spend time with him here in the studio. So let's get right to that now, to hear his story as he told it to you on this Family Talk broadcast.
He lived the story that we're about to hear. He experienced the horrors of the war and the concentration camps. But it was not until fairly recently that he even told his own family the details. Bill Meyer is with us. Bill, thank you for being on today to talk about something that's not going to be easy for you to discuss, is it?
Thank you for inviting me. I am both honored and comforted by the invitation to speak out.
I mentioned that your wife did not know about the details of your early experience until 15 or 20 years ago.
That's correct.
Why?
She knew about it, but we didn't talk about it. I did not see no reason to stir it up again at that time. It was over, and we had to go on with our lives. Those who forgave their tormentors could go on and live a normal life. If you kept brooding about your bitterness, you became an invalid the rest of your life. So I had to work at a large family. I didn't speak about it unless she knew I was in a camp. That was all.
Speaking of a large family, you have 6 children and 20 grandchildren.
I had 6 children and I raised 2 more stepchildren.
And you come from a large family. Let's go back to Holland in 1940. May 15th, 1940 is when Holland surrendered to the German army.
That's correct.
And everything changed. They occupied your country. And everything was dictated by the Nazis by that time. And tell me again, you had 16 siblings?
18.
18 siblings.
And only 2 are alive, yeah, after the war. Yeah.
All right. In 1940, you were 9 years old?
Yes, that's correct.
9 years old.
I was 8 when the war started, but that was May. And July the 4th, I was 9.
What do you remember about the coming of the Nazis?
Well, we were bombed for 3 days and 2 nights constantly, the first 3 days. And I didn't know what bombs were. This came from a carefree little boyhood into a bombardment for 3 days. So, but after we were occupied, life went on as normal for the first half year.
Were you terrified when the...
Not really. I was a boy. Yeah. It's kind of adventurous. It was terrifying while the bomb does, but you forget quick, and the world went back to, quote, normal for the first half year.
And then what happened?
Then the Germans decided that every Jew should wear a large yellow star with the word Jew.
You were not Jewish?
No, I was Christian.
Yeah.
Now, as Christians, we did not like the Jews very well. The whole of Holland didn't care.
So anti-Semitism was rampant.
It was really fed by our churches. Our churches at the time said we were God's chosen people, the church. And the Jews outlived their necessity. They killed Jesus Christ. And they were no more of use to God, but the church, now quote, the church was God's chosen people. So when the Germans said, we'll take them to war camps, we said, good riddance to you, bye-bye.
Your father was
a Nazi.
Was a Nazi?
Well, pro-Nazi, yeah. He was a policeman. He had to be Nazi to keep his job to begin with, but he was pro-Nazi, as many Dutch people were.
And he was anti-Semitic. He was...
Absolutely.
Yes.
Most of the people were. I didn't know enough about it.
All right.
But in our churches, we were taught that Jews were nothing but swine, pigs.
Yeah. But you began to observe what was happening even in the streets. You saw children beaten in the streets.
Absolutely. But I had to go back a little. Next to our house was Corrie de Boom's clock shop. You heard of about the Boom family?
Yes. Well, let me say it the way Americans understand it, the Ten Boom family.
Corrie Ten Boom.
Corrie Ten Boom.
And Betsy.
And you lived right around the corner from
right.
them. Yeah.
In order to get out of my family, we did not get cookies. But if I went in the shop, I would get milk and cookies. But in order to get some cookies, you read me some stories, and then I would get a cookie.
And in those days, cookies were rare.
Not on my menu, not with 20 children.
And there was not a lot of food for you all anyway,
no,
was
all there? We had is potatoes and onions and stuff. So I went in the clock shop a lot.
And she began talking to you about Jesus Christ.
Right. And I thought, I was more interested in her cookies than into her theology. Yeah. That was for sure.
Yeah.
She was telling me that the Jews were God's chosen people and not the church. We were grafted into the church, but we were not God's chosen people. The Jews were. That was the difference.
She had a great heart for Jewish people, didn't
Absolutely,
she?
Absolutely, yes.
Now, she was at that time trying to save Jewish people, but you didn't know that.
No.
And she was putting her life on the line even back then, trying
Absolutely,
to rescue
100%.
Them. And they had what was known as the hiding place.
Yeah.
I think most of our listeners would be aware of Corrie Ten Boom's hiding place. There was a movie made and a book written about that subject. Mm-hmm. And she was arrested after someone had informed on her and her family. And, of course, the Gestapo came in and took them off to a prison camp. But during this time in the early 40s, you, as just a child, began to get involved in the effort to save Jews. Now, you've already said that you didn't grow up in a home which would have had the kind of moral framework for your doing that.
Not at all.
So why?
Rebellion against Dad. Dad was against it, and I would be for it. Mm. Isn't that typical of a young boy? I heard from Corrie all the time that we were all people. And when you see children being beaten to death on the street, you know that's wrong, no matter what your political...
Did you see that?
Absolutely. Mothers carrying babies were torn from their arms and their heads smashed against concrete walls. Then you know it isn't right. But for a 9-10-year-old boy... I wanted my cookies, tell you the truth, and the milk, and my dad was against it, so I was for it.
How did you get recruited into the effort to try
she asked
to save
me to,
Jews?
Corrie Ten Boom asked me to deliver a little package. I delivered a lot of packages for her as a boy, for watches and clocks to clients, so I thought this was a watch or a clock. She said, no, those are food ration stamps and false IDs, travel passes, passports to the Jews in hiding out in the country. So I thought I was a little boy. What would they do to a little boy? So I did. I agreed to it.
You rode your bicycle?
Over the dikes, about 50 kilometers into Friesland. Friesland is a northern province, which was not occupied by the Germans, because they were mainly pro-German, Friesland was.
Yes.
And there was where we hit the Jews, right under their noses.
How soon did you know that you were helping to rescue?
1942. She told me that some of them had weapons in them, some have them travel passes. And if I was caught, they would send me to a camp.
Did your parents know what you were doing?
No. I asked my dad if I could do it. He said, absolutely not. And when he said, absolutely not, I thought, I'm going to do it. Mm.
So you ride your bicycle out to Friesland,
which is about 50 kilometers.
Yeah. And who would you deliver those packages to?
Two farmers, a convent. The Catholic convents in the middle of the war took a lot of Jews in the convents and hit Jewish people. They needed travel passes, but they couldn't get food. They needed ration cards. So the underground printed them, and I delivered them to them. Then in 42, I delivered two Jewish children to a convent on the back of my bicycle. We had no rubber tires on them. We used rags and socks on the rims. That was tough. But I thought I could put one over at the Germans, and I did. It was not brave or heroic, absolutely not. I thought there was not going to do anything to a little boy. I was blonde, blue-eyed. The Maastricht, remember? They called the blue-eyed people the Maastrichts.
Yes.
So I thought, if they catch me, what would they do? Put me in a camp? So what? I was not that heroic.
Well, how did you get caught?
Well, after a trip, I used to go to the clock shop to get my next assignments.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in, the Gestapo was there. And they said, what are you doing here? I said, picking up a clock. He said, which one? Well, that one. Well, he said, what's your name? And I told them my name. And boy, immediately they arrested me. They said, you brought packages for Corrie ten Boom? I said, no, I didn't. But after a few beatings, you will acknowledge it. And
now,
I did.
Now, these grown men began beating you. You were 12 years old at the time? 11?
Yeah, 12, yeah. 12 and a half, yeah. It was in 1943.
Go on with the story.
So they arrested me then and put me in jail. And without clothes, they took all my clothes away and kept asking me, and well, if you are without clothes, you confess easier somehow. I don't know why that is, but my dad was a policeman. And we lived right across of the jail.
Mm-hmm.
So at night, my dad came to see me, and he said, what did you do? And I told him, he said, oh, dummy, this and that. So he took me home. And when I thought that was the end of it. Well, then they came in and arrested my dad and killed Mom. Killed most of my family. And they took me back to jail. And then put me on a train, one of those trains you see here, to Vught. Vught was a little camp for political prisoners in Holland. And there I stayed almost 2 years, a year and a half, maybe a year and eight months.
What was life like inside that prison?
Unbelievable. Mere words cannot describe the cruelty. It can convey some thoughts and some ideas, but it was designed to kill people. It was not a war camp. Every hour, you thought it was your last hour. The worst thing of the camp was the hunger. Absolutely 24 hours a day hunger. You dreamt hunger, you slept hunger, it crept in your bones. And I mean hunger.
What'd they give you to eat?
Almost nothing. We get a half a potato and a half cup of soup, a loaf of bread a week. But a loaf of bread in Holland was just
a tiny little thing.
And if a stronger person than you would take it away while you stand in line for your bread, they would take it.
You were just a child.
So we would eat grass.
There was no member of your family?
No, they were. Later on, I found out they were already all killed.
How many members of your family were murdered?
18. Immediate family, not some cousins.
Were they killed because of you?
Probably. And that
they
took me back home.
So when you were caught, they took it out on all of your family.
Well, while in the camp, they hang my cousin in front of me. I have the picture here. They did that to punish you more.
So
no
they
reason
they
at all.
Allowed you to see your cousin
being hanged. Yeah.
You told me that they didn't use a hangman's noose.
No, they used
a
rope.
They just put a rope around the neck.
You up.
Which means they strangled
half
to
hour. Half hour. A child who was lighter in weight would struggle maybe longer than a half hour before he...
You stood and watched that.
We had to watch it on roll call. We have to watch it. We have to march past him.
How did you survive emotionally?
I have no idea. I sure didn't believe in a God then and there. I thought, where is my God? Where is the God of Corrie ten Boom and Betsy? He allows all this. I don't want that kind of a God. And all the prayers of old men and women who prayed, and God didn't answer them. So that didn't come back till later.
Tell me about the cousin. How old was she? How close to her were you?
My cousin was probably my age, 12, 13 years old. Had nothing to do with it.
Why was she there?
Probably to punish me. Because my family was already killed. Otherwise, they would have killed him probably in front of me. I don't know those reasons. All I know is that the people, even the Jews, did not believe that the conditions in the camps were nothing but to kill. They told they were all stories, exaggerations. And the thing what hurts us survivors the most is that people don't believe that those camps existed, that it happened. That is the hardest thing.
I would think it would also be difficult to know that you can't put into words what that experience was like.
You can tell the words, but it will not convey the hunger. It will not convey the beatings, the pain, the cold. The one winter was 20 below zero all winter long. And we had only a cotton pair of pants and jacket on. We stood on roll call for three, four, 5 hours.
Yeah, you described the roll call. Every day, you had to come
5 out
o'clock and stand.
In the morning. And you stood there, and everyone had to be numbered and called and counted. Even the dead people have to be, who died during the night, has to be dragged along the field to be counted.
What would happen to those that fell out?
They would kill them. If you dropped down there, you got killed or beaten. If you dirtied yourself, you would be beaten. And there was a lot of dysentery and diarrhea and going on. So if you dirtied yourself during roll call, that was cause for a heavy beating or a hanging or a shooting.
And that went on in front of you?
Daily.
Regularly?
Daily. And I had no mom, no dad, nobody.
Did you cry?
Well, so most of the time, but then after a while I was more defiant. We fought like animals for a little bite of bread. But the bread was gone in 44, so we ate flower bulbs, grass, and horse manure.
Oh my, what we've been hearing today is quite beyond our comprehension. It is the deeply disturbing yet true life story of Holocaust survivor Mr. Bill Meyer.
And it is just... it's impossible to wrap your mind around the situation. None of us in this room have been in a situation even close to this, and it's just beyond our worst fears.
You know, I mentioned at the top of the program that I thought people had an obligation to understand that era, because you can't be opposed to it unless you have even vicariously experienced it. And that's why I want to recommend, as difficult as it is, that people who go to Washington, D.C. take time to go to the Holocaust Museum there, because it commemorates 11 million people who were slaughtered during the Nazi regime. And it will move you deeply and passionately, but you will come out of there with a better understanding of what human wickedness and depravity is like, and why the only answer for it is Jesus Christ. He has the only answer. Everything else falls short.
And Doctor, for those like myself who have not been there, really, this broadcast today is a great way to begin introducing this concept to our children. I think of all of those who are homeschooling, especially, this is a powerful history lesson, really to all of us as we raise our children.
I would recommend that it be at least in junior high or high school, not before. This has the power to be so disturbing that it would create nightmares for younger children.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Again, you can get a copy of this two-day broadcast on this topic to share with your children at familytalk.org, or even send a link to the podcast, or get a complimentary CD. Again, all of that at familytalk.org.
Luann, also there, listeners can request a copy of the 35th anniversary edition of Corrie Ten Boom's classic book, The Hiding Place. We have heard about our guest's friendship with her as a child, and I'll tell you, that book should be required reading for every home.
It is in mine. Again, you can find that at familytalk.org or ask about it when you call 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us, and return tomorrow for the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's conversation with Holocaust survivor Mr. Bill Meyer.